Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Bulky Boot Podcast. And today is going to be the preview for Chelsea versus Luton in the FA Cup fourth round. Now, before I get started, I just want to make a little announcement that the super duper quote unquote mighty Arsenal that people call, like, that them Arsenal fans think they are out of the FA Cup. They've just lost 1-0 to Southampton after, from what I've read, I didn't see it, an absolutely abysmal performance. So yeah, there's that. AFTV is going to be absolutely awesome, and it is what it is. It's another big hitter out. Another Prem team out, should I say. And so Man United or Liverpool, well, they're going to knock one of the other out. It's all good. But let's get in to the preview. Now, I'm going to get into Lampard's press conference in a bit, because I want to spend a bit of time on it. So we're playing Luton. They're in the Championship, I think. Bear with me. I will literally just search it if I can. What position they're in, like where they are and whatnot. But basically, they're not in the Prem. If we beat them, we have got... Who have we got in the next round? I've come into this completely unprepared. If we beat them, we've got Barnsley or Norwich in the next round. So, Luton Town. I'm going to try and find their form as well. Luton Town is a professional association football club based in town of Luton in the Championship. Yeah, so they are in the Championship. Let's have a look at their form while I'm here. Matches. My computer's being really slow right now. Results. So in terms of results, when it loads, their last match, they lost 1-0 to Brentford. Then they beat Bournemouth, lost to QPR, beat Reading. So they beat Reading in the FA Cup to get to us, and then their form's constant flip-flopping. So since Christmas, lost to Reading, beat Bristol, beat Reading in the Cup, lost to QPR, beat Bournemouth, lost to Brentford. So it's win-loss, basically. Where are they in the league? They are currently, once it loads, sitting in 13th in the Championship. They've played 25, won 9, drawn 6, lost 10. Minus 6 goal difference. So, yeah, looking at their last 6 games in the league, it's draw on the 19th of December. Loss, win, loss. So, yeah, they're very, like, very flip-floppy on their form right now. So, we're going into this game, and it should be... should be a win. However, with our form lately, you can't really assume that, because we have also been abysmal lately. The match against Leicester, for example, we were just shocking. And since we beat Leeds, we've lost to Everton, Wolves, Arsenal, City, and Leicester. It's 5 losses in our last like 7 or 7, 8 games, and it's actually why I've gone for a very strong but also shifted lineup. So I've got 2 written down. I'm gonna jump into those quite quickly. So one is in a 4-2-3-1 and one is in a 4-3-3. Ultimately, I think we'll go with the 4-3-3. However, we're playing Luton. We're in bad form using the 4-3-3, so why not mix it up a bit and try something different? So both have got Kepa in goal. My left back and 2 centre backs are the same in both. Well, my back 4 is the same in both, actually. Emerson left back, Rudiger, Zuma, centre backs, and right back either Livramento or Reece James to get in minutes. So if it's Livramento, that's brilliant. It's another academy player coming through to the first team. I think he will be ready. But we'll have to wait and see if he actually plays. So in the 4-2-3-1, I'll finish the rest of my team. I've got Billy and Mount in a pivot. Andrew in left, Callum right, Kai in the 10, Timo up front. In the 4-3-3, Billy at the base of the midfield in front of the back 4. Havertz and Mount in front of him. Andrew in left wing, Hudson-Odoi right wing, Timo up front. So the lineup personnel are the exact same in all of them. It just depends on where they actually play in position wise. Andrin's looked good when he's come on. Pulisic, I know he was decent against Leicester, arguably one of our best players and actually trying to make shit happen. But at the end of the day, we know he's injury prone. So don't risk him unnecessarily. We've got Andrin in there. If it's not working, we can bring off Andrin, put on Ziyech, swap Callum and Ziyech over. The other thing we could do would be play Billy, Mace and Kova or someone like that in midfield, and then put Kai in behind Timo and Tammy, or Timo and Drew, Tammy, Drew, whatever combination of strikers, and actually try and play 2 up front and then use the fullbacks for the width. Any of which I'd like to see. I really want to see Livramento in the first team. I really want to see Billy get minutes, because Jorginho, Kovacic, they haven't lit themselves on fire lately. It's been complacent. It's been slow, lethargic. They haven't been good. And when they haven't been good, do they deserve to start? And I know a lot of people will sit there and say, yeah, but what about Timo? But, well, it's different. Because the only way a striker is going to get confidence is by scoring goals. Timo's getting in the positions to score those goals. It's just a matter of putting them in the net. However, when you've got Jorginho, who is slowing everything down. When you got Kovacic, who is good at a few things, but then loses the ball all the time. It's like, it's just one of those things where it's like, really? Just, no. Like, especially when we've got players like Billy Gilmore, who, when they have come in, have been phenomenal. And I don't say that lightly, because Billy has been incredible when he's come in. Regardless of his age, if he's playing better than the established, quote-unquote, first-teamers, then in my opinion, he deserves to start over them. And the fact that he didn't start against Fulham, when Kante was suspended, is criminal to me. It really is. Because it's just one of them things where if you're not going to play him when Kante isn't playing, let's be real, Kante is our first choice DM. So if he's not available and you're still not playing Gilmore over because of players who are in bad form, then just send him on loan. Like, what's the point keeping him here to have him on the bench? Send him on loan and let him play and let him develop. Because at the end of the day, you look at some of the teams in the Premier League, he'd walk straight into them. He is that good. He came on again, started against Everton last season, produced a man of the match performance. Same against Liverpool last season in the Cup, had a man of the match performance. And it's, Billy needs to play. There's only so much training is going to teach him. And yeah, I would. I'd start him this match. I'd go for a strong lineup, and also bring in a couple of youth players so that they're not completely hung out to dry. Hence why I'm putting in Livramento and Andrew in. And well, I say that because the likes of Mount, Callum, they're established first teamers now. So, and even Reece, if he starts, they're established first teamers. So my point is, we're already mixing up the lineup. They're Luton, like, as again the same with Morecambe. With all due respect, with their side, we should be beating. I mean, by all means, keep reserve, like, keep artillery on the bench just in case. Like, so with this lineup, have your Pulisic, Ziyech, Giroud, or Tammy on the bench. Like, keep your Aspies, your Silvers, like, keep big names on the bench, basically. Ready. Just in case. And if shit does hit the fan, make the subs early. But what I want to happen is that we get the game sorted, 3-0 up by half time, and in 60 minutes or so, like, hopefully if Timo's got a goal by then, could bring him off, put on like Soonsop Bell. We can bring on players like Soonsop Bell, like Bate, Lawrence, who was the other one? Oh no, that was it, because I've got Livramento and Andrew Stein. We can bring players like that on, get the game done and finished, and bring them on, give them minutes in the FA Cup, in and around the first team, like, as in and around the first team players. And then mainly, like, so looking at this now, hypothetically, we're 3-0 up at half time. Right. Timo's got two of them. Take him off. Take Timo off. take Callum off, Havertz off, Mason off, and either Reece or Zouma off. That's if Reece plays. If Livramento plays, keep him on. So if Reece is playing, bring off Reece. If Zuma's playing, bring off Zouma. So that'll mean as soon as I've Bell up front, you'll have Bate in there. And my point is, you can give some of these players who want minutes in the first team a chance. And that's why I'm saying, if we get the game done, dusted by half time, we can just cruise through the second half using minimal energy and just get on with our business, move about our day and actually rest some players. Because we got another game, I think we got Wolves midweek. I'll soon tell you. We got matches, fixtures. So I'm on the Chelsea website right now. So we got Luton tomorrow at 12 PM on Sunday, UK time that is. Then we got Wolves on Wednesday, Burnley next Sunday. Is that Sunday? Yeah, Burnley next Sunday. So we've got three games in a week. We need to rest players. We need our best 11 fit for Wolves and ready for Wolves, because they're in poor form at the moment. They've been struggling since they beat us. So against Wolves, I'm gonna write it now. Mendy, Chile, Zouma, Silva, Reece, Kante, Kai, Mount, Z, Pulley, and then a striker, which I'll always back team up front on his own as a centre forward. So, because we've already tried Giroud against Wolves, we tried Tammy against Wolves in the second half, and it was literally just cross, they clear it, cross, they clear it, cross, they clear it, cross, they clear it. Carve them open in the middle. And with Kai, Ned, Pulisic, Ziyech, Timo, we've got the players to do that. So out of those, yeah, the three main ones I'd bring off would be Timo, Mount and Havertz. So it needs to be done. Get the game done. So, and I think we will do it if we go with that strong lineup. So I'm going to go with, I think we'll score at least four again. I'm going to go with 6-1 win. And I'm going to back Werner to get a brace. Or more, obviously. I also think Kai will get one as well. And so, a lot of people have been saying Ziyech for first scorer. I've gone Timo, Brace and Kai, one goal, and the scoreline being 6-1 win. The reason why I've gone for such a strong lineup is because I believe we need to go for the FA Cup. We really do. Actually go for the trophy. And because that will soon shut a lot of the Lampard out lot up. If he can go ahead and win the FA Cup, they'll calm down. And they'll be like, all right, whatever, sort of thing. And they'll be like, yeah, but he won us a trophy, and maybe we'll calm down a bit, give him a bit of time. Highly doubt it, but it's worth mentioning. But speaking of something that's really worth mentioning, Lampard's press conference yesterday, was it yesterday? Yeah. What a press conference it was. There's massive talking points to go with on that. First thing I noticed was as soon as he sat down, he had what looked like purple rings under his eyes where he just looked like he was shattered. Like he'd been spent all night working out what to do, like trying to come up with a solution to fix our league form. That's what it looked like anyway. But nearly every single journalist asked him about his job and his future. And some of the answers he started giving started becoming very, very snappy and sort of like going back at them a little bit. And the biggest recipient of that was Liam Toomey. He asked something along the lines of the players' confidence and all that. And literally the first thing that came out of Lampard's mouth was he turned around and said that the players' confidence bound to be shot if they read some of the articles that he posts. Like, it was a proper firing of a shot at Liam Toomey. Basically saying that his criticisms of the players aren't fair and shit like that. Now, I don't read The Athletic personally, but from what I'm understanding on Twitter is that Liam Toomey's actually quite fair in criticisms. Again, whether that's true or not, I don't know, so I can't say. But lots being made about it. It's unprofessional. It's this, it's that. And like, for Lampard to do it, I completely disagree. The one thing with me is that we've seen in press conferences gone by where people are just firing these questions at him and he's just repeating himself over and over and over again because they keep asking the same shit. Whether it's about Tomori, whether it's about Timo and his form, whether it's about Mason and his constant selection. Like, he keeps getting asked the same shit over and over, and of course it's going to piss him off. He knows the pressures that come with the job of being a Chelsea manager. He knew it when he took over. He knew it during the good patch. He knew it during the rough patch. He knew it during the summer when Roman gave him that money to buy the players. He knows. He's not a stupid man. He's actually a very, very intelligent man. And when they're constantly sitting there, basically kicking a dead horse, going, your job's on threat, your job's on threat, your job's on threat, your job's on threat, how are you reacting to it? Your job's on threat, how are you reacting? It's like, it gets to a point where you are just going to snap and you're either going to say witty shit back to them and be like, give it as good as you get, or you're just going to snap and go, you know what, fuck off. And I think what Lampard did yesterday was both of them. Like, it started off, he was giving snappy responses and you could see his face just kept getting more pissed off as it went. And then when Liam Toomey said what he said, it was just one of those who just sent him over and was like, you know what, you're right, basically slagging off his articles and criticising his work, whether it was justified or not, it shows he gives a shit. It shows that Lampard actually cares about his job and that he wants to be there. But this is what I'm taking from it anyway. The last time I see him react like this was when, back in 08, 09, I think it was, his mum passed away. And it was nearly all the media stories was about that. And it's like, first and foremost, they didn't give him or his family an ounce of privacy to deal with the loss of Lampard's mum. Then he scored the penalty against Liverpool and he went to the corner flag and on his knees and all that. I remember the goals because I still get goosebumps about it. And it was always that. Constant reminder. And he took it on the chin. But the second, so one of the journalists started interviewing his sister or something like that, or banging on about like how it's affecting his other family and all that. And he snapped. Because he was like, normally, like, basically, as a football journalist, you should be asking me about my football. You shouldn't be going behind my back about my fucking family and all that shit. And then he turned around and said that it's made it very personal to him now. When it was just about him, like Frank Lampard, he could accept the fact that it was part and parcel of his job because it affects his football, his form, etc., etc. Then they went after his sister and he snapped. So it's the same, but not. And I'll explain what I mean. Lampard obviously loves his sister. So when people started attacking that, well, not attacking, but started trying to pry into that side of things, he got the ump and he snapped. He loves Chelsea. He is clear on his face when we lose, when we concede a goal, when we score a goal, when we win. You can see the love and the passion for the club and for the job and for the players is there. He spent the majority of his career with us. 13 years of his life with us. And when people are constantly going after the one thing in football that he loves more than anything, it hits a nerve. Like for any fan watching this, if someone slags off your club that you love, you defend them because you love them. Lampard loves the club. He loves his job. He loves the players. And when people are constantly digging, just trying to get a headline, not even trying to basically, not trying to get an actual decent answer, but just prying for a headline, it got to him. And yeah, I don't blame him at all. I mean, maybe he went about it in the wrong way. Again, I don't know. I haven't read the articles posted by Liam Toomey or The Athletic, because that's who he's with and all that. But at the end of the day, Lampard's reaction was human. And it just reminds us that footballers aren't robots. And it's another thing. Because saying that footballers aren't robots, it brings up a very big point with some of our players on being on poor form, which is what set him off in the first place. The likes of Kai, he's 21 years of age, maybe 22 now, I don't know when his birthday was. But he was 21 when he came, I know that. New country, His family's back home. He's got to find a place and settle. No pre-season because we bought him late. Which, even if we did buy him early, it's a short pre-season anyway. Then it's constant matches because of fixture pile-up. So you've barely got any time to actually train. Then he had to isolate for 2 weeks because he had COVID. And it weren't just like a mild case of COVID. He had it severe. And then he's come back, already going through all that. And then he's getting fucking hammered by the media, by fans on social media, by everybody. And why? Because of that fucking price tag that he has no control over whatsoever. No control. It's the same with Timo. It was the same with Pulisic last season. It's the same, similar way in what Callum goes through, in the fact that, oh, he's after being requested by Bayern Munich. He's on so-and-so money. He should be on this and doing this. These players are human and people need to fucking realise that, because at the end of the day, that's the other one. It's what I was saying about the COVID, like the hugging and all that. You can't cut it off. The fact that that people think, oh yeah, we'll tell them not to hug each other after a goal. Good luck with that. You think we score a 90-minute winner to win the Premier League, we're not going to hug our fellow players because of COVID? No, fuck off. At the end of the day, they've all tested negative. Because if they tested positive, they wouldn't be on the pitch. You can sit there and like grab each other and be close to each other in a corner and a free kick and all that, but you can't hug after scoring a goal. It's ridiculous. And at the end of the day, you look at the statistics and the numbers as well. And how many of the people that severely, like, out of all the people who have, like, sadly passed away, I'll be real, it is very sad that they've passed away. But how many of them were elder? Not elderly, elder. So, like, 50, 60 plus. How many of them already had health issues? Majority of them. So, a 20-something-year-old footballer who's as fit as anything, yeah, if they get the virus, yeah, it might be bad. And in Kai's case, his symptoms were horrible. But they'll get through it. And I do understand completely, it's the message that it sends. But you can also look at it on the other way. Send the message that if you listen to restrictions, you can get back to that. You can get back to seeing your family, hugging people, going back to watch football, going different places. Like, well, for argument's sake, I've been waiting to get a tattoo done since September. But it's been shut. My artists haven't been able to do it because of COVID. And it's simple things like that where people want to go back to normal but then aren't listening to restrictions. And that's why I really can't wait for this vaccine to roll out as quick as possible. Really can't. Because the quicker it rolls out and the quicker we get majority of the cases down, the sooner we can start opening things up again and going back to normal. Because people are saying COVID's the new normal. No, it ain't. It will never be, because people are too stuck in their ways to change. Like, for example, going on a date with a girl, cinema, movie, restaurant, like cinema, movie, same thing. But cinema, restaurant, like, we can't do any of that now because they're all shut. You can't see people, well, you're not meant to see people outside of your bubble. So meeting up with someone for a first date isn't going to happen. You got all these companies going out of business because of COVID. And then people who begged for football to come back when we had the COVID break last year are the same people now slagging off footballers because they're doing their job and actually having a care about it and showing a bit of passion when they score. It's hypocrisy. You can't have it both ways. Either you want football back and let them crack on like normal, only behind closed doors, or you just say, fuck it, close down football until it's safe enough. But for them, it is safe. They've got strict protocols in place. As soon as anyone gets tested positive, bang, they're straight out the door, their own. They get tested multiple times a week. So, I don't see the problem. But one last quick thing before I go. Fikayo Tomori. He's gone to AC Milan on a 6-month loan, which is fair enough. It's a good move for him. Being under the stewardship and tuition of Paolo Maldini. The one thing that's pissed me off with the entire thing, we've given him an option to buy for 25 mil. And I've just got this sickening feeling that that's going to bite us in the ass big time. And then in a few years' time, when we see just how brilliant he's doing, we'll then want to buy him back. And then they'll sit there and go, oh yeah, that would be 100 million, please. When we could have just kept him. Chances are they're going to end up going ahead with that option to buy. Either way, it's a lose-lose situation for us. Because if he flops his loan at AC Milan, it proves that he's not... Well, it'll prove that he's not ready for a big step up. I think he is. But if it does fail at Milan, it'll shatter his confidence. He won't be ready. If his loan goes well, they've got an option to buy for 25 mil. And as far as I'm aware, there's not a buyback clause, which I believe there should be. With a player of his talent, put a buyback clause in there, please. I think that's... We're quick enough to praise Marina and our negotiators when they're... When they do great business. But we're not quick enough to criticise them when they do bad business. And I believe this is one of those instances where it's a bit of bad business. Tomori is going to be our next De Bruyne, in my opinion. Where he'll go to Milan, he'll become absolutely insanely world class. And then he'll come back to the Prem at a different team, like a Man United, Liverpool, I don't know who. And then he'll be the best defender in the league. And we could have sat and gone, oh. Well, we could have had him. But we decided to go for pocket change. And I've just, it's happened. We've been burned too many times with the same sort of thing. Declan Rice is another one. Didn't make it through our academy over the likes of, well, actually, no, Declan Rice is of Mason Mount's age. I was going to say over like Lewis Baker and all them, but that's a different generation. But the point still stands is we sold Declan, got rid of Declan Rice. He didn't make it for our academy and now we want him back. If we'd have just stuck with him in the first place, I don't know. But, I mean, I really do wish Tomori the best. This isn't a thing against him. I think what it is just pointing out the idiocy of our club at the moment, letting him go for that. Not on loan. The loan itself would be a good move because Paolo Maldini is arguably the best centre-back of all time. But the option to buy is the one that's the kicker. That's the one that gets to me, and it is what it is. But that is going to be all from me, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for listening. If you did enjoy it, please share me around. I would very much appreciate it. Follow me on Twitter at CookCO4. That is CookeC04. And until next time, which will probably be it will be after the match, but probably on Monday, I'll give you a joint review and preview for our next two games, basically, so Luton and Wolves. Until then, I will speak to you later. Blue is the colour, and good. Bye.